Well, hello there, and welcome back to the Nerd Podcast. That's never-ending retro dialogue. I'm Jordan.
I'm Doug.
Today is a pretty special episode. How would you describe what we're going to talk about?
Well, so we've been on for almost 2 years, correct?
That's right.
And we have been saying from day one that you can be a nerd about anything.
That's right.
And today, we are going to attempt to prove that.
Scientifically.
Exactly. We have a guest with us today. His name is George. He is a husband of one of my coworkers, and like me, I think this is fair for me to say, he is a nerd about all the originals, all the normal stuff you think nerds are about. You know, the comics, the anime, manga, Star Wars, Star Trek, that stuff. But my contention has always been anyone that collects anything is nerdy about that thing. And I know you guys can't see what's sitting in front of me right now, but I'm over the moon because this is stuff I also collect, and I've been doing it since I was young. So without further ado, let's go ahead. So we got George.
Hello.
Are you doing?
Good.
Good. Thank you for joining us. What was the first thing you started collecting?
Knives.
Knives, okay. Same.
Yep.
Same.
Yep. I got, we had a old hardware store in Milford Center that had the old-timer knife case. And they got, I was a newspaper boy in Milford Center, and the hardware store got a paper every day, so I was in there every day. And constantly, from the time I was 8, 9 years old, you know, until I was, I think I was 13 when they finally, like, I came in with a permission slip from my mom saying that I was allowed to buy a knife.
That's awesome.
And I had saved my paper money up for it. I did not bring it. But I still have it. It's
what kind is it?
It's a Schrade old-timer, green Darolin lockback. It's deep in my box of knives at the house. But that was my what got me started on collecting. And there was several Schrade old-timers after that. And then, you know, it's kept going, you know, in the years since. Accumulating in this.
Oh, very nice.
Which is Sabenza.
Oh my goodness.
From Chris Reeve Knives.
That is beautiful.
Which is one of my has been for 20 years. I wanted one of those, and I just got one last year.
That is
so
gorgeous.
Yeah.
So how many knives do you think you have? Ballpark with. So, I guess I should...
Several hundred.
Yeah. So, I grew up, we collected, and like you, and we'll get into it, my dad collected guns, I collect guns. My great-grandfather's the one who started it all. He had hundreds of them lining his room. One of the things is we could talk about them with people, but I wasn't allowed to tell people what I had or how many.
Right.
That was just how I was...
Yeah.
Was brought up, so I apologize. I shouldn't have asked.
No.
But we're grown ups now, so
right, yeah, yeah. No, but, no. I have not counted in years.
Yeah.
It's an illness. It really is.
Oh yeah.
I'll be going along, and I have no plans on buying. You know, like right now, the Sabenzo was like such a pinnacle of like where I wanted knife wise. There was nothing like after it for me where I was like, I guess I'm done, right? I'm done.
Else to buy.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And that's been almost, well, I guess it's probably been 2 years ago. And I've probably bought another nearly 100 knives since then. You know, I can't stop myself.
Knives are one of those things
where it's, an eye thing, you know, where you're like, ooh, like that.
That looks nice.
You know, and then, you know, and price can enter into it.
Of course.
You know, where you're like, not only do I like it, you know, and everything, but it's a well-known maker. Mm-hmm. It's going to hold value, you know, or and also it could be like, I've never heard of these guys ever before in my life.
Yeah.
And so then I go and find out about them, mm-hmm. you know, and been like, oh, wow, you know. And then you're like, well, the first one of theirs that I saw that I liked, well, now I'm seven knives later.
Uh-huh.
of knives of theirs that I liked, and I didn't even know that they existed before.
Yeah.
You know, so
Sharon's grandfather, he and she'll tell me if I get this wrong or not, but he had a huge collection of buck knives,
mm-hmm.
but he had so many of them because he would just randomly lose them in the yard or whatnot, and so
or you know, in a pair of pants or
yeah. yep.
in a room or you know, and you're like, well. I guess I got to get another one. And then you get it, and then the old one pops back up again. And you're like, well,
oh, where did that come from?
I have two.
I actually gave Maddie, after my dad passed, he had a larger buck knife, and that was his hunting knife, and that's what he used to field dress and whatnot. And she has that. But they've actually kind of gotten into it because there's these French knives that they really like where you can unscrew this cap, and it's kind of a nice little nifty thing to keep in your purse for
there's a
sudden needs.
There's a French knife company out there called Opinel.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so many places that you go now state-wise and everything can have like blade length restrictions
yeah.
or over in Europe and everything you can't have knives that lock open.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Opinel knives have a collar, a secondary collar
mm-hmm.
that you can engage that, you know, turns it into a fixed blade.
Yeah.
But it's not a locking, like what we would think of as a lock
as a
back
locking,
over
yeah.
here. But yeah, there's, and that was another, like knives, I didn't know, like as a kid growing up, older and everything, there's as many niche segments of knife collecting
yes.
as there is in anime or
correct.
I mean you're like, you know, and you could start a fight by saying, you know, so and so is better than so and so and
yeah.
then like, well, I like them both and
yeah.
then both of them are like, you can't like both of them, you
yeah.
have to like one or the other.
It's like yeah, knives are one of those things. It's kind of like finding a cool action figure, Jordan, because
mm-hmm.
I'm going to assume you don't own any knives.
I have a set of cutlery knives.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Well, there you go. You've started.
Yeah, you started. But there's something like these ones here. You know, there's just something about
so these
their look, and then you've got the weight to them. They're works of art, really.
So these are World War II.
Wow.
So here we go. Yeah,
these are World War II fighting knives.
That's wow.
The Katargus 225Q quartermaster's
mm-hmm.
knife.
May I?
You may. So how these four knives came to be? I auction. I go to auctions.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole nother thing. and I ran across this guy, and
yeah.
he has obviously been. Well, honestly, he probably was in the war.
Yeah.
in more than one way. I picked it up for like $20. And it had no sheath.
Uh-huh.
You can the pommel on the back end of
mm-hmm.
it got broke off at some point in time,
yep.
you know, and everything. It was really beat up. And back when I got it, it's not that eBay wasn't a thing, but there like it wasn't eBay like today eBay.
Mm-hmm.
I could get on eBay now and probably get 100 of these.
Absolutely.
But eBay back then, you know, maybe one or two of them might
yeah.
be on there somewhere. And everybody thought that theirs was the only one out
exactly.
there. And so they wanted, you
mm-hmm.
know.
That's worth $600.
Right.
Yeah.
And so... So for a long time, you know, I follow, especially on my knife collections and stuff and everything, and knives that I want but aren't available, aren't in production anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing that you get into is like, you know, out of production stuff. Same with any other kind of collection that you have.
Yep.
For if you're into action figures or, you know, it's, yep. it's a lot easier to get it when they're making it. Yep. And then once it, you know, it's kind of hit or miss.
The second market.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Then you're, yeah, you're at the vagaries of the secondary market, and does someone that have it want to get rid of it?
Exactly. Or were they an a-hole and bought six of them? And then...
Right. Yes. Yes. These are, you know, so for a long time, I couldn't find a nice one.
Mm-hmm.
And I, oh, it was probably almost 10 years later, was going through the county classifieds, and an auction popped up, and they said that they had Katargus 225Q was the gentleman was, I mean, it was made my collection of knives look like
mm-hmm.
like nothing. It was so many knives. I've never seen so many knives. It was insane. I can't say that because I'm there now.
Yeah,
20 years later, I am him. But at the time, I was like, wow. So, but I opened up a case. It was laying, like, upside down in the mm-hmm. case where you couldn't see the knife. You just see the sheath.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, I think that's it. And so I opened up the case, and I flipped it over. And it's the age has broke the leather now, you know, mm-hmm. and everything. But, and I pulled it out, and I'm like... It's brand new. It's brand new.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't think I brought enough money. that was my instant thought. I was like, there's no way that I have enough. Like, someone else is going to know what this is.
Yeah.
And then I won't have enough. And I got lucky, and no one else knew what it was. And the auctioneer butchered the pronunciation of Katargus.
Oh.
And he's like, it's one of those old military knives, guys. And no one was really bidding on it.
Wow.
And I walked out of it for $60.
Awesome.
And
that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I was expecting, I had 200 in my pocket and was yeah. expecting it not to be enough.
Wow.
And so, and then the other two are ones that I found on eBay
mm-hmm.
in the years since then that were in, are in okay condition for
yeah.
their age, you know,
yeah.
and everything. And the prices were of a comparable, I think I gave between like $40 and $60 for them.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Which is, you know, on the lower end for what
Absolutely.
They tend to go for.
God,
so
that's just, we will, if you're willing, have to take pictures
yeah.
of those.
Yeah,
and
no,
and we'll post that when we post
yeah.
it. Because those are, so these are the things that my great grandpa, when he was alive, was he was in his 80s, and so but every month he would have my dad take him to the Allen County Fairgrounds, and we would go to the gun show, and we would push him around, and just as a young kid I would just stare at the tables because
mm-hmm.
like you said, you've got these niches of
yep.
of well, this person only collects military grade, this person only collects this person collects, we'll get into cowboy, you know, stuff. And you, it was, I don't know, it was just, my great-grandpa, he had a couple of these, but he was more in the, a function guy. He wanted a knife that he could use out in the field. Now, you could use out in the field, but
right.
By the time we were looking
Which
at these, they're
kind
so...
kind of why these two came to be. Because
mm-hmm.
I was like, this guy, I can't.
You can't.
And
oh,
this
no.
guy's beat up to the point where I would feel...
might be unsafe.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's how these two showed up.
That
because
way you've got something.
Because
you can
right.
use.
Right. Yeah. I don't feel, you know, they're still in usable condition,
mm-hmm.
and but not
they're,
super collectible.
They're not
condition.
As nice as that one. That
right.
one is
yes.
beautiful.
And so that's how that came to be, because you know that way I could
mm-hmm.
I could take one, you know. Now I've got a Buck 119
mm-hmm.
that, you know, is more of like a, my, you know, more of a hunting knife if I was, you know, to go hunting or whatnot.
Yeah.
And I have other more modern heavy use knives.
Sure.
So like as my collection has progressed through the years, you know, these guys have gotten more relegated back to riding in the box with everybody else versus
they're just there to look pretty now.
Versus being, you know, out and being my users.
Yeah. I'm going to assume that like us, you probably had, at least I did. This knife always went with me when I went fishing. This knife went with me when I went hunting. This knife went with me when I went camping. This, and so it was always a different one.
In the knife world, they call it an EDC,
mm-hmm.
everyday carry.
Yep.
Right. And I think I've got like 7 or 8 of them that mm-hmm. I cycle through that are that these are the ones that are always out. And I wake up in the morning and I go, who's going with me today?
Uh-huh.
Kind of thing, and sometimes it stays the same knife for a while, mm-hmm. you know, and everything. Or sometimes I'm like, I want you to, know, and you know,
yep.
So
I haven't used you in a while,
right?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, you're feeling unwanted. Let me fix that. Oh, Gus is investigating.
Yes.
Now I do want to take I want to get you involved in this,
okay?
Because I know you can't talk about the knives and stuff. And I know what you're going to talk about, so go for it.
Okay. What I collect?
Yeah.
Well, I collect writing utensils.
Yes.
And machines. I don't remember how it started. Probably when I was a teenager and I found a typewriter in a thrift store.
Uh-huh.
I remember that typewriter really well because my mom was like, let's go find a typewriter. And I was like, okay. And I thought she was going to buy it for me, but she was like, well, you found it. Go ahead and buy it. And I was like, I don't have the money for this, but I did it anyway.
Now it's my typewriter.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So that was probably my first typewriter. And then I worked at a place that had an old typewriter, probably from the 20s or the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought that. But well, that was actually a Christmas gift. But that I never used because it was so big and it like shook the whole table when you would press down one key.
But
typewriters aren't the only thing. I also collect like physical like pens and stuff,
mm-hmm.
Which I know you do pens, but like I have like quill feather pens and wooden bamboo pens, glass pens,
mm-hmm.
Fountain pens.
Now have you got to the point where you trim your quills and everything?
No, I...
Because then we're into knives.
We can get you into knives.
Right, yeah.
I haven't done that kind of thing yet. I've ordered them pre-trimmed because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. But it felt pretty nice to write with a quill feather pen. It almost makes you feel like you're signing the Declaration of Independence or something.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, but typewriters are probably my main thing. But, like, I love just... the idea of the evolution of writing utensils,
mm-hmm.
but typewriters I've got, I think I have 4 now, and I have a couple electric and a couple manual. The electric are the ones that I use because they're much easier to use because you don't have to like put so much pressure behind them,
mm-hmm.
which I always tell people want to romanticize the typewriter and they want to use a manual, but when they start using a manual, they're like, this is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it's going to suck for a while until you're going to lose speed, but you're going to gain finger strength.
Yeah.
So, but I actually recently found a typewriter for $7 at Second Chances, which is here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Brother model, and it works perfectly. And I was like, I can't believe you guys are selling this for $7. They didn't even know if it worked or not. I was like, I'll buy it for $7 even if it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But I went home and I tested it, and it worked perfectly.
That's awesome.
So, but yeah, so just being a writer and everything, I'm just fascinated. Because, like, I use my laptop to write everything, basically. But it's not as appealing to me. It's not as idealistic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, using your laptop, you're kind of like, okay, like, everybody's doing this. But, like, if you think about some of the greatest works ever written, they were written on a typewriter. And it's like, how did they do that?
You have to think about what you're putting down, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
erasing,
you definitely have to.
I mean, on some of the newer typewriters, erasing is a thing. I mean, like, you white out on them and everything, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you really had to have your thoughts
mm-hmm.
composed.
Absolutely.
As you were typing, you know, for that kind of stuff.
I'm still in the process of trying to find the typewriter that I used to use when I was in elementary school
and
middle school. My mom thinks she's got it somewhere. It was my dad's, and it was a little travel one, so it came in a case.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like maybe a little bit wider than this notebook paper, but it's manual. And, yeah, you're sitting there just beating the heck out of it. But I do have, and you know this, I've got my grandma's 1995 Canon word processor. It was, she had gotten it to write her family history. And I was there all the time helping her because even though it wasn't computer, my grandpa thought it'd be easier. It was not. But yeah, for the toy show, and I think we actually talked about this in our end of the month for June, I made signs because, you know, you had a disc for clip art. So I'm sitting there putting all these goofy things on there and making these signs for my table for the toy show.
My class in school was the first word processor typing group where the year before us they were the last actual typewriter you know, learn typing on a typewriter where we learned typing on a word processor. So that I was right there at the flip over into computers.
Yeah, see, we didn't even go to
word processors.
We didn't even go to word processors in Ada. We went from electric typewriters to the computers. Oh, mine was my junior or senior year, and we got some Windows computers. Now, when I was in elementary, we had a computer lab that had some Macs in it. And so we would play that game. Remember the little green turtle, and you could do these designs and stuff and play Oregon Trail and blah, blah, blah. So we had that, but they didn't have like a computer class.
Mm-hmm.
And typing was on a typewriter.
Oh, yeah.
And then they brought in these Windows, the PCs, and there we go.
Was it Baldur's Gate?
Oh wow!
With the 3.5-inch floppies. It was like right there, like floppies going into CD-ROMs.
Yeah.
And there was no graphics for the game. It was all like, you know, the text would come up.
Yeah,
with the. You know, this is happening. What do you choose to do? You know,
Yep.
And the dice rolls were, you know, the computer did the dice rolls for you, you know, and everything inside of it. And, you know, it was, that was our very first one. What was the operating system? DOS, was it 3.1, 3.2? But, yeah, I mean, you know, the early computer stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, too far.
I should say I also have a word processor now.
That's right, I bought
one off eBay. It's very big, and it has a space for floppy disks, but I don't know that anyone makes floppy. I mean, it's funny because Amazon makes floppy disks.
They are still out there available.
I've got some downstairs if you want some.
I don't know that the
floppy disks work. Is it the 3.5 or the 5?
I'd have to relook at the specs. I don't remember, but...
it's probably the 3.5.
Probably.
Yeah.
But
now, ours... in school were the 5-inch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the old 5-inch.
Yeah, I
and
think
they were really floppy.
They were actually floppy. Yeah, that was where floppy came from. Yeah, that 5-inch was like, wooga, wooga, wooga.
Yeah. I think when I got the word processor was when everybody was like, what are you doing? Because they were like, oh, typewriters, that's so romanticized. But then I got the word processor, and they're like, why? And I was
because that was next.
I don't have it. It's the step I don't have.
Yeah,
it's
the one exactly. That was next. Yeah.
I had a friend, so when my father-in-law passed away, we were cleaning out the property, and he used to work for the phone company before they turned into Sprint, so whatever they were before that.
Mm-hmm.
And he took out phones, put in the new ones as people were modernizing, and so in the loft of the garage, we found like dozens of all these old phones from the 30s and 40s, and most of them were just ruined, but I ended up finding a handful that were in pretty good shape, and so cleaned them up. I mean, it took forever. I still have one down in the basement because it's just cool, but I had a friend that I bowled with. He wanted it. He was a tech nerd, and he actually got it to where it would work in his house. He had to do some rewiring and stuff, but it actually worked. But I mean, again, it just shows if there's something out there for everyone.
Just just because you're not a nerd in what everyone considers the technical sense of it doesn't mean that you can't be nerdy.
Exactly. You know, it's a passion.
Something else. Yeah. Right, yeah.
It's a passion and a need to have that collection, look at it, and just and edge it. And also there's the part too where you find the joy in educating and showing people.
Right. I think that's part of it too, because it's not just having it like a dragon's hoard.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, it's the interaction with other people. Because not only are you collecting it, then you tend to go find others like you.
Mm-hmm.
I joined the Ohio Gun Collectors Association. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yep.
I mean, I'm aware of like regular gun shows and everything, but and this is kind of a gun show, but they also, these guys do displays.
Mm-hmm.
At like, you know, here is my collection. This is what it's about, you know, with posters and, it's just, you know, and every meeting that they have will have a theme so that, you know, eventually they'll get around to what you like. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to, you can do a display for your collection, you know, kind of
thing.
That's
awesome.
And there's no, it's just, you know, as long as you're a member, you can do the display thing, you know, just let us know and, you know, and we'll give you, how many tables do you need to put your stuff out, you know? And then you sit there all day and they'll talk to you about their collection, you know, and it's interesting and fun stuff to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to assume I already know the answer to this. I'm sure you've got a wide array of firearms that you collect, but is there a certain one that you're just like, ooh, I gotta add that to this because of what it is? Now, here we go.
That is an 1892 Marlin 22 lever action. So a few years back, I got on a kick where I wanted a 36, which is one of their more modern ones.
Uh-huh.
And the prices had got crazy for the 36s. Mm-hmm. They were wanting over $1,000 and more for them. And so I was just looking, you know, not, you know, got my money together for it, you know, but ran across a guy in Indiana that was selling this, and I took a half day off work and drove 4 hours to Indiana to pick it up.
That is gorgeous. My goodness.
But he said that it was 1897
mm-hmm.
Marlin, but I'm fairly certain that it's a 92, which is, I mean, it's not like a big difference.
Yeah.
The 97s were all takedown versions mm-hmm. of the rifle, which is what this screw is right here.
Mm-hmm.
If you take this screw apart, the barrel and the receiver come apart and you could pack it in your saddlebags mm-hmm. as like a cowboy kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the 92s were split kind of. There were some of them were takedowns and some of them weren't takedowns.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was this one I've been looking for a real long time and is really the only like original, like real cowboy gun that mm-hmm. I have.
Yeah.
Because even though I do have adult money, real cowboy guns are like a whole other, like,
yes. Oh, I'm aware.
Like a whole nother pay bump up. And so to scratch my itch, I've gotten reproductions.
The nice reproductions.
Right, yep. Very nice reproductions and everything, but not the real,
yeah.
You know, because you were looking at triple to mm-hmm. quadruple
oh, yeah.
what I paid for the reproductions.
My dad had, and well, I still have it. It's a Marlin Anniversary Lever Action 22, and it's the, is it?
If it's a Lever Action 22 Marlin, is it the 39A?
I'd have to look at it. But it's an anniversary. It's mm-hmm. a commemorative.
Yep.
But that was us, too, is we could never, ever afford the real thing. So we actually one year bought balling cap pistol kits. And in the basement in the old house when I used to live across the street from Honda. And once a week he would come because they would watch our daughter when she was little. And we would sit there and we were working on this kit, getting, man, we were filing, we're doing this, we're doing that. And
that one predates kind of my cowboy stuff. I have a 54 caliber flintlock.
Oh, wow.
But also, once again, not an original.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
My great-grandpa had an original flintlock.
Now, and see, then that's one of those strange things about gun collecting, in the fact that there are flintlocks out there, original flintlocks,
mm-hmm.
that can be astronomically high
yeah.
in value. But there were a lot of relatively unknown
mm-hmm.
makers of flintlocks.
And
you can find very nice examples mm-hmm. of originals for not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Relatively
speaking.
Right,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Relatively speaking. But yeah,
might
you know,
be a
well,
lot to Jordan.
Right. Well, you know.
Someone who doesn't collect would be like, wait, you're going to pay how much?
for something that most of us, even, you know, like, or I would be like, it's probably not ever going to get shot again.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
Even if it could be, you
mm-hmm.
know, just the chance of it not surviving it would be. Would break my heart.
Yeah.
So,
there was actually a guy, we belonged to a conservation club in Ada when we were growing up, when I was growing up. But every year they would have a black powder shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of the guys had more modern black powder rifles. But there was one gentleman, I can't remember his name, but he had the most glorious sideburn muntjacs. I mean, they were amazing. And he would pull up in his station wagon, and he'd put down the tuck to the back gate, and he'd start putting stuff together, and he'd be doing this and doing that, and he'd pull out this thing, and I mean, I don't know when it was from, and he was using actual black powder,
not Pyrodex, not
exactly.
Yeah. So that when he pulled the trigger, it was.
And
where'd everybody go?
Yeah. That's, oh my! But it was absolutely amazing to watch.
If you ever are in the presence of like a real black powder firearm going off, shooting black powder, it blows my mind that they fought wars
yes.
that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably where the term "fog of war" came from, because after 3 or 4 volleys of that, you wouldn't be able to see anything
exactly.
for, you know, yeah.
That's a neat, I love that segue real quick before we get back into the guns. There's another nerdy thing that people probably don't normally think of is the military reenactors.
Oh, yeah.
When we got married, we actually, our honeymoon started in Gettysburg, and we got married at the end of June. So when we're in Gettysburg, it's the anniversary of the battle.
Yeah.
And so at the B&B we're staying, we've got reenactors. We're the only people that aren't reenactors.
Yeah.
And the town was just besieged with all these people dressed up. And it was just so cool because you had reenactors that were doing the war. They're doing the battles. Most of the people in our B&B, though, they're just they're period reenactors, where they dressed the part of civilians that would have been in Gettysburg. It was wild.
Well, and then, so, another part of that is the Civil War was one of, there was a lot of spectating for that, that a lot of people, you know, like, you don't realize that that stuff was going on, like, on the side on a lot of these bigger battles and everything, where, you know,
people were just looking out the back window.
Yeah. But
it's wild. We actually met and had dinner with, or lunch with, a mother and son, and they were from California, and they had flown
all the way
to Pennsylvania, because her husband, the gentleman's father, loved reenactments and traveled all over the country doing.
And they do that is
it was amazing. And he had passed, but they still got together and did the reenactments.
I think down around Dayton, I can't remember which holiday it falls on and everything, but they have a big reenactment down in the Dayton area.
Okay.
And Memorial Weekend every year, right up here near us, is it Zanesfield? No. Yeah, Zanesfield. Up in between East Liberty and Bell Fountain. They have a reenactment every Memorial Weekend.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that. I knew they did some in Lima back near where I grew up.
Yeah.
But I didn't know in Zanesfield. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's 3 days long. They have an Indian powwow. Yeah.
Jeez.
An encampment, you know, and everything, where they camp out back there for 3 days, and then you can go back and, you know, see a period correct, what would have been like a frontiersman encampment.
Sure.
Less military style. But yeah.
And if you think about it, have you ever been to Sauter Village up in Northwest Ohio? I mean, it's not much different than like Colonial Williamsburg. You know, you've got a whole village where these people are dressed up in the period piece. We bought cornmeal that actually the corn had been milled
right there.
I mean, but that kind of dedication and just adding that little thing where you get to see that stuff. You could make your own candles. You could buy the cornmeal. I don't know. It's just because I'm a history nerd, I find that stuff wildly entertaining and they grab my attention. But back to guns. I'm sorry. I love tangents.
I have been, through the years, been attempting to get into cowboy action shooting, which is like LARPing with firearms.
Yes. Yes.
You're not shooting guns at each other like, you know, you whack each other with the foam weapons and LARPing.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, it's close. It's close. The cool thing about cowboy action shooting is they're, like most nerds, are excited to have people interested in their thing that they're, you know, geeking about.
Yeah.
That they're nerds about.
Exactly.
And, so you don't necessarily have to have all of the firearms that you need to start doing cowboy action shooting. All you have to do is find out where they're at and show up.
Yeah.
But
now describe for our audience what cowboy action shooting is. That way they get an idea of what we're talking about.
They set up a cowboy town. And then the town will have like stages in the town where you've got metal plate targets that are your bad guys, and you work through with a stopwatch, work through the stage shooting the bad guys. And then you've got to rotate between Sometimes it's just a shotgun stage. Sometimes it's just a rifle stage. Sometimes it's just a pistol stage. But usually it's a combination of all three: shotgun, rifle, pistol. And you'll go from, you know, each discipline as the stage progresses. Mm-hmm. Usually, you end with shotgun, and they'll let you place your rifle, kind of like how in the old style westerns, where the good guys knew the bad guys were coming, you know, and they'd be putting rifles, shotguns, and in spots, and like, you know, so that I'm going to shoot this gun until I run out of ammo, and then I'm going to have, you know, while I'm going to work my way to the next gun kind of thing.
Arnold did that in Predator.
But then also they have, some of them will have like a Quigley match, where, I mean, I Quigley Down Under is...
Such
I've got to say, one of the westerns. So this is not the Sharps. This is a similar time period.
Okay.
But still, this is a replica.
Look at that.
Of the Winchester 1885 high wall.
Nice.
In 45-70.
Nice.
I do believe that his rifle in that movie was 45-110.
I believe you're correct.
Or 45-120. Yeah. I think it was 45-110. Which all that is just a slightly longer version. Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't seen Quigley Down Under, you should.
But that's a 45-70. Yeah. And a 45-110 is
just
I want to say, like another inch longer.
Yep. Beautiful. But, my gosh.
But, yeah, this was, so, yeah, the Sharps Quigley rifle, is probably my next, well, no, it's not my next one, because, I don't know, I can't say, Amber's going to listen to this.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, like, don't get yourself a joke. Plead the fifth, George, plead the fifth. this is a great Buffalo gun.
Okay.
Yes.
This
would have been, and the premise of the movie Quigley Down Under, he was a buffalo hunter that thought that he was going to Australia to shoot kangaroos.
Yeah.
And come to find out that it was not kangaroos that they wanted him to shoot, but Aborigines.
Oh, yeah.
At which point in time...
Alan Rickman's a bad guy.
Yeah, yeah, very bad guy. A very, very bad guy. Severus Snape.
Hans Gruber.
Oh, my gosh. He was so bad. He did an excellent job in that movie.
Yes.
You really hated him at the end of it.
Yeah.
So this would have been like Winchester's answer to the Sharps rifle back then. And you could have got it chambered in 45-110, you know, whatever the Sharps were getting chambered in also. But, yeah.
See, this is, I mean, you know my affinity for Westerns. This is...
That was probably what got me started, was John Wayne. And John Wayne, Gary Cooper, all the old Westerns growing up. I had several uncles that were... my father passed away when I was very young, but I had several uncles that were very into Westerns and Western type stuff, you know, and everything. So that's probably, you know, that's where I, you know, and as I got older, I was, you know, started my own, you know, ability to get into Western stuff. But so the whole setup is you have two pistols that you have to have, but you have to have two pistols and a tradition. Well, depending on what you're shooting. B Western has the drop leg rigs. This is more like traditional cowboy where the rigs are up on the belt. But you have two pistols, a shotgun, which either has to be a pump shotgun with an external hammer.
Okay.
Or a double barrel.
Oh my gosh, look at that.
Which can have external hammers or not. I like the external
hammers. That is beautiful.
So I went with external hammers for my
shot.
Wow.
May I?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So.
Look, no one knows what I'm holding right now, but I feel like I'm on a stagecoach.
Yeah. And I think that's...
And I'm literally riding shotgun right now. This is... Oh my gosh. This is amazing. Wow.
So.
That is great.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So you have your two pistols, a shotgun, and then you have to have a lever gun of the time period. Actually, they're pretty liberal with their lever gun. I mean, like some of the modern lever guns, they're not a you don't have the right stuff, you can't participate group. They're pretty
because again,
okay about
this,
it. Because
this
they want people to join, and
the more people you have participating, the bigger it becomes, the more popular it becomes, and let's be honest, the more money you make. but
Some of these groups are...
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Look at that.
So that's a it's a reproduction of the 1873 Winchester.
Uh-huh.
For more modern, so instead of being brass framed and everything, it's steel framed to let it handle the modern cartridges, you know, a little bit better than the brass frames did. But
you are speaking my language right now. I've watched YouTube videos, endless YouTube videos of people doing the cowboy.
And
it's just like, oh my God, I want to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, that is fantastic.
And then, so that one was, but Rossi makes it.
Yes, they do.
That is the very, very intro price point version of it.
Yes. I've actually looked at one of these before.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. We're sharing it. Yes.
She's going to listen to you, too.
Yes, she is.
The fifth. Stop now.
Yeah, she knows my affection for lever action rifles. She knows I want to get... Eventually, I want to have this set up where I have a lever action, and I have the correct period time.
Yeah.
Sidearm.
When I got into this, I was like, I wanted them all of the same caliber.
Sure.
Just because if I was a cowboy, I would want all.
That
you know
way
what
it's
mean?
Just
like,
one
why
more.
You're not right? Yes.
Yep.
And. The come to find out afterwards, as I got into this, you know, and everything, their rifles were 44-40, where there weren't a whole lot of pistols in 44-40.
Yeah,
it was 44 Russian and 40, and you know, so the. My rose colored glasses, how I thought it was not, you know, that just wasn't a thing that was possible for them back then.
Yeah.
Not that they probably couldn't have gotten stuff rechambered and everything with gunsmiths and whatnot and everything, but it wasn't, even back then, I don't think gun manufacturers were. You know, the more calibers that we have, the more ammo that you have to buy, the more, you know, so they weren't really interested, I don't think, as much to have rifles and pistols and everything all chambered in the same thing.
Yeah.
They were like, you'll get what you need to get.
Exactly.
And I guess that's what they made saddlebags for.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. The shotgun. Where did you get that? Was that at a show? Was it at a shop? Was it?
It was.
Are you new?
Delta
a guy?
Delta Armory in Urbana.
Okay. Yep.
I walked in, and I was like, you know, the angels sang and light came down from heaven, and I was like, what? And I'd probably get myself in trouble and everything. I love Delta Armory in Urbana, mostly because of the fact that the price that they have on the gun already has tax worked into it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, and for those of us that are into firearms, tax is one of those things on firearms where it's kind of like, oh,
yeah.
You know, when yeah. they, when, you know, when you go to ring up the, because for conservation purposes for America, firearms, ammo, all that stuff, we pay a higher tax mm-hmm. on that stuff to be able to fund conservation. That's how a lot of wolves get reintroduced in places, and you know, there's a lot of stuff that hunters and people out there don't realize that there, a lot of stuff that hunters and gun aficionados and everything, we pay extra to be able to make sure that the wild outside stays wild.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I like about Delta Armory, though, in the fact that their price on the gun is what he's charging you at the yeah. register. So there's yeah. there's no extra
yeah.
heart palpitation yeah. when it finally gets rung up all the way. It's like, I already know.
Here's another $75.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Or, I mean, you know, or, I mean, some of the rifles, you know, are,
mm-hmm.
it's an extra $300-$400 mm-hmm. on top of it. You're like,
mm-hmm.
huh?
Yep. Yep.
I'll be back. I know. Okay. But yeah. Ooh.
That is beautiful. Oh
so,
my gosh.
So they do like there. There are other like matches and everything where they do like side matches, where you, where there might be like a barrel restriction where mm-hmm. I can't have the 4.5-inch barrels.
Gosh,
I have to have an even smaller one.
Yeah. Oh, looky there. Oh my Which gosh, is, looky there.
Like a. It's still a 45 and everything, but it's like a little baby one.
This thing has got to kick like a...
It's different.
Yeah.
And also, the 45 ammo for cowboy action shooting is downloaded.
Okay.
So you're
okay.
not shooting...
Okay.
You're not shooting like a hot 45 round.
This is...
Yeah.
That is... I mean, it's gorgeous, but that yeah. is...
The bird's head wow. grip on that is not, like, I got it. I thought that I liked it and everything. And then I've shot it a few times, and I'm kind of like, I still like it, but it's so much
that's
different.
It's got to take some getting...
Yeah, it's so
yeah.
much different than a traditional...
Oh, my goodness.
What a traditional grip is for
yeah.
a firearm. well, not for a firearm, but for if you're into Colts.
Yes.
It's just not a...
That's
it's
eventually
not
what
same.
I want to get because I've got a circuit judge that can cycle between a 45
and
or a
410.
410.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, perfect. I just need to go ahead and get myself a cowboy pistol. And,
yeah.
And there we go.
But yeah, that's an
See,
older
yeah.
version of this style right here.
Yeah.
Because they've been making reproductions.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of. Replicas. A lot of replicas are like non-firing replicas.
Correct.
Reproductions
they're just
are
for,
right.
Yeah.
So like it's,
they look pretty.
They're not replicas.
Yeah.
They're reproductions.
Yeah.
They're functioning.
Yeah. You
just,
can use
these
it
are made
for the
like,
intended purpose.
The a lot of these are because the patents and everything have lapsed
mm-hmm.
over time and everything. All of these are made off of the original patents.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say the parts are interchangeable, but for a lot of
close.
Them, the parts are interchangeable
yeah.
with originals and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, they're as close to the real thing as you're going to be able to get without actually going and buying
yeah.
the real thing.
Oh my gosh.
Where, you know, I could have six of this pistol for
mm-hmm.
what the real thing, for one
Correct.
Of the real thing is
exactly.
going to cost me.
Exactly, yes. That's always been the thing that's been disheartening going to shows. It's like, right. Oh no.
So,
okay.
And then, oh, so.
And then and there we go. We got a Bowie knife too.
And there's nothing that says that you have to have a knife with your gun belt. When I ran across that years ago, I was like, I have to. So there was, so all of this leather was a gentleman in Southern Ohio.
Uh-huh.
His shop was called Lucky Levi's Leather.
Uh-huh.
He's retired now, but I had him do all of this. All my leather is all matching.
Nice.
All the tool work, yeah, and everything, all across all of it, is all same for. And he very nicely did all that for me. Oh my goodness, probably 20 years ago.
Jeez.
I know, because the belt barely gets around. I may have to go. Here in the next 3 or 4 more years,
you gotta,
I may have to expand to a new belt.
The pop of
which I don't even know. I mean, like, he's retired. He was an older gentleman when he made that for me, and so then to find someone that has the same tooling and everything.
I'll get a business card for you. There's a guy that used to, he would come to the craft shows for the band.
Mm-hmm.
But he did leather work, and he did modern stuff, but he did a lot of cowboy stuff too.
Okay.
And Wild Bill's Leather, I think, is what it is. But Sharon's got his business card.
All right.
I'll take a picture and send it to you, because he did really nice work. And I'm trying to think, there's a guy down in, what's that village in Southern Ohio. There's like a village where you can see old timey stuff, and there I actually have a leather box over there. The guy made the leather box, but he does a lot of cowboy rigs too. I may have his card somewhere. Wild Bill's I definitely have, because Sharon, oh my God. I don't want to stop talking about this, but I want to bring up a couple other things.
Okay. No. So that was what got me into it. Was cowboy. Well, got me into this part.
Sure.
Of it was cowboy action shooting.
Yeah.
Obviously,
you already had a collection beginning.
Yes,
but this is again a nice little subcategory
of a larger thing.
When it comes to
guns and everything, just like knives, there's. You start, and then all of a sudden it's like...
It's a rabbit hole. Because even within the cowboy competitions, you've got the subset where you've got the fast draw, the quick draw guys,
right.
And
yes.
gals.
And they've spent all kinds
of
money on their guns, getting them where it's...
YouTube that sometime. It is...
They do a short stroke on these... So like this is as close to original as you can get, and so for it to got safety, but there's the lever only goes to like there, and that's enough for it to fully cycle. It's so much faster.
And then them drawing the pistols is just phenomenal.
And so they've got like. To make that happen, and I didn't realize that, like, getting into it, you know, and everything. This stays open relatively well, you know, because it's nice, thick leather, you know, and everything. But when you're really getting into that, theirs is actually reinforced with, like, steel in the inside. And then for the fast draw guys, they've cut this down to be able to get it out quicker.
They literally, it just... They pull it up and immediately... They don't even pull it up. It's just boom, right there at the hip. It is insane.
There's a guy on... What is his name? Is it the Cisco Kid? But he does a lot of quick draw demonstrations where it's not just one shot. He comes up and he'll shoot three times.
Yes.
And you're like...
Yeah, how, what?
It sounded like, you know, like your ear only picks up that one. That one yeah. boom. The three shots have happened so fast.
Yeah.
With a with a pistol that you literally have to cock.
Yeah.
Every time.
Every time.
You know, it's like pulling the trigger doesn't do anything for it if the hammer's not back.
Yeah.
So he's... It's, he's amazing.
It's a wizard.
Yeah, it's a, yeah. You're a wizard, Harry. For
he
sure.
Be, he should be in our D&D group.
Oh, yeah.
John wouldn't let me be a gunslinger. Yeah. John. Well, I'm going to touch on, because I think we're yeah. getting, oh, we're getting
can't,
close.
Can't dwarven artificers be?
I think
I
so.
I mean, that should be able to have guns.
Well, you know what
a,
he told me? He told me I couldn't be, I could be a gunslinger, but I wouldn't start with any guns. He had to, I had to find it in the, so he wanted to control
oh.
what I came up with. And I.
You were like, meh.
I said, yeah, no, nope. Meh. But couple of real quick things, because I actually got a text from a buddy of mine.
Yeah.
Who we've talked about before, Weldy, who's been on a.
Yeah.
Well, has his air
not
jet?
Yet,
his
not.
Has an air jet. By the time you hear this, his would have aired. But he has recently started collecting LPs. And so LPs, I think, back in the day, everyone had been like, oh, yeah, yeah, everyone
yeah.
collects those. But now it is so...
it's kind of come back
it's
again.
Kind of come back.
You're
my
at, yeah.
son has two or three dozen records. I mean, and, you know, he's 20 years old. But, yeah, I've got, I think I've got, like, almost 200 12-inch records. And I've got 105 45s. And then I'm staring over at my DVD collection.
Yeah.
And that's just half of it, George. So,
it makes me feel so sad now, because everything is, I have my old, like, there's certain DVDs that you can't get.
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, the Ben Affleck one, where
Dogma.
He's an angel.
Dogma.
You like you can't get one anymore.
We have it. We
you,
have it. We never.
I need to borrow it. I need. I so need to borrow it, because like none of my kids have
so
been introduced to Dogma.
I have heard a rumor. They're going to re-release it on Blu-ray soon.
Okay,
is what I've heard.
Well,
and
then,
I'm gonna. But yes, you're a freak.
Yeah.
Dogma is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It's such a great movie.
It's so.
But,
it's so blasphemous.
You know. now. My collection, like a lot of things, is mild compared to some of these people I see on
right,
TikTok. Because
yes.
some of them have their basements where they're
right,
lined with walls of DVDs
yeah.
and VHS. But we've got two of those. So we've got, you know, close to 1,000 DVDs / Blu-rays, because we have more downstairs. And then we've got like 400 digital movies. So,
right. well,
you know,
and
it's...
So then, because we did... I kind of jumped in on the whole digital thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because why not? I mean, I don't have racks and racks of DVDs.
Exactly.
We had one of our digital catalogs got bought by another company.
Oh no!
And so for 3 or 4 months, we eventually they got everything worked out and
yeah.
everything where. Everybody got grandfathered into the new
yeah.
company, and
gotcha.
You got to bring your old stuff into the new company, you know, and everything. But for
yeah.
a minute there, I was like, I've got 300 movies that are gone now.
Yeah, yeah.
And but they're not. I've got them back, you know, and everything. But for a minute, I was
which
like,
which is one of the reasons.
Yes,
I keep.
Why
on,
not?
I hold on to my
DVDs
because
it's real. You have it.
I just in case.
Right. Yeah.
You know. They're ones that I absolutely would not want to lose.
Right, yes.
You know, every once in a while we'll go through them and we'll purge, but mm-hmm. it's like, no, I can't.
Yeah.
It's
And so that a few months ago, when that happened, was kind of eye-opening for me in the fact that where I was like, well, maybe I want to start, you know, getting back in on the DVD
right.
collecting
if
again.
If I find
because,
something, it's like, ooh,
right, yeah, where I was like,
find
yeah.
something odd. Because, you
yeah.
know, the streaming services, oh, I have it, oh, now
don't,
I don't.
Now it's gone.
And,
yeah.
And
yeah.
believe me, that's when I'm in different stores and I see Blu-rays for $5 or whatever, it's like, well, what is it? Oh, I don't see that out.
Yeah.
Or if I go to Half Price Books, especially, I always
oh,
look
yeah.
for Godzilla movies, and I always look for some rando British TV
yeah.
stuff. But I do want to mention one other thing, And one of these days, maybe I can talk my friend into being on here. But I contend you can be a nerd about cars, too. Because this guy can, he will look at a car, tell you what kind of engine it's got in it, this, that, boom, 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 blah, blah, blah. And it's like, but he's like, oh, you know, it's just, he uses the word aficionado or
right.
you know, this, that. It's like,
but
that's just a
just
fancy
another
word,
word
to say
for
nerd.
Nerd. Right, yeah, that's just a fancy nerd.
But, George, I cannot thank you enough for coming and bringing, my God, I just...
Sharon's never going to
forgive you for stirring this back up now because
it was just going to be my trunk of knives and I was
I'm glad you brought that.
I was like it's adult collections that you can be a nerd about.
And especially this cowboy action stuff is so specific. You know, anyone can have a gun collection. You know, and that's still
you can be nerdy about it, but when you start
getting into that very specific thing and like military stuff,
it's not reenactment. I mean, it is kind of are guys that get into it that, you know, but I mean it's more than just this.
Yeah.
It's the clothes
and
the boots and the hats.
Yep.
And you know, I mean it's a whole thing to suck you down into.
Absolutely. And so proof beyond
scientific proof, I was
reasonable doubt that you can be nerdy.
You can be a nerd
about stuff other than comic books.
Yeah,
and Star Wars.
And Star Wars, yeah.
And Harry Potter. I love it. I love it. My gosh. Well, George, thank you so much. We will definitely get some pictures taken so that we can post it along with our episode for everyone to see. This is absolutely, it's been a blast. Do you have anything to add?
No.
I'm sorry, you got kind of typewriters.
I'm watching other people nerd out.
Isn't that great? I love it.
I'm having the experience of what the average listener must have when we talk.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So, it's good.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, George,
thank
you, everyone. If you guys have something
What's an unconventional nerdy thing?
That you... collect that's unconventional, drop it on Facebook or Instagram, leave it on a message on the on our page, whatever, because I'd love to know what you guys collect that people don't think about, someone can be nerdy about. So all right, guys, thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time around. Stay nerdy.